Hello again and welcome to podcast number 7, Time Flies. This time I'm going to begin with another great tenor, Ferruccio Tagliavini, born in 1913 and he died in 1995. He may not be quite as well known a name as Caruso, Gilli or Björling, but in his prime he was genuinely one of the great tenors. He first studied with somebody called Amadeo Bassi, who some collectors will know from his early phonotypias, and he was a well-known dramatic tenor of the pre-World War I era. Yet Ferruccio Tagliavini himself was very much a lyric tenor, and in the 40s and early 50s, when he was in his prime, he produced a sound that few, if any, tenors have been able to match for sheer beauty. He obviously, as far as I can hear anyway, must have been copying that mezza voce sound that Gilli, well, sort of created, invented, if you will, and so you might call him a Gilli copyist, but if he was such a copyist, then he was indeed a great one. Unfortunately, he also tried to follow Gilli down the course of adding dramatic roles and lirico spinto roles to his repertoire. And unlike Gilli, who had that sort of voice that could take the strain, this really cut Tagliavini's career short and really took away his wonderful beauty of voice. Nevertheless, in his prime, in the 40s and early 50s, he produced a series of records which are absolutely wonderful. Yes, okay, from time to time he could be accused of being a little croony, but sometimes he just produced a record that was definitive. If you can make one definitive recording of one aria, in my book at any rate, that puts you on the highest plane of great singers. And I'm going to give you such a record now. Tagliavini recorded Fenton's aria from the beginning of Act 4, Falstaff, by Verdi. When Verdi wrote this opera, he was about 8 years old, but obviously still remembered what it was to be a young man in love, and he gives Fenton the most gorgeous of love songs to sing. Tagliavini's version is well-nigh perfect. It has never been equaled, in my opinion, and frankly, I doubt that it ever will be. This is Tagliavini at the height of his powers, around 1941, I think it was, and, well, here it is.
Come fa la luna, come fa la luna.
wonderful track. Just to be precise, it was actually recorded on the 5th of October 1940. I wanted to add, as a songwriter, that just shows the great art of songwriting. Forget that it's part of an opera. That was a sustained melody that just about didn't repeat anywhere, and yet you're carried along with it. Wonderful. Verdi was just a great songwriter, and of course we call it opera now, so it sounds all posh. But he was doing nothing different from any other songwriters done before or since. He just happened to be one of the great ones, and he developed throughout his career and was still producing stuff of that quality when he was 80. Well, I hope that I'll be able to do something like that when I'm that age. Now, a few years earlier than Tagliavini, another lyric tenor was born, and this was a lyric tenor of a very different nature. But although he was able to, and indeed recorded, several operatic arias of the lighter sort, he was known just as much for his popular song and for being a heartthrob in France and for being a film star for the same reason. His name was Tino Rossi, and with a name like that, you wouldn't have thought that he spoke French, but he was born in Corsica. And throughout the 30s, his career went from strength to strength, and it was only cut short by World War II when, to be brutally frank, he was accused afterwards of actual collaboration and was actually put in prison for a very, very short time. Although later in life, François Mitterrand recognized his contribution to French culture, and he was late in his life, in 1982, made a commander of the Legion of Honor, Legion d'Honneur. So it's a strange life in that sense. Now, he's made some wonderful recordings, beautiful, lovely voice. It was never a voice that would have been really able to stand up on an operatic stage. I think it was a microphone voice, really. Nevertheless, there's some wonderful recordings. And this is one of his most famous ones, the one that's called J'attendrai.
J'attendrai le
Tina Rossi with J'attendrai in 1938, when of course you still had to have a boing at the end of all ballads for some unknown reason. That sounds sort of dated. Wonderful though it is, it sounds very much of its time. There are other things equally of their time which somehow don't date, and I suggest that the following recording is one of those. Fats Waller was born in 1904, and he died in 1943, which means he didn't even make 40 years old. Yet somehow, when you hear his voice, it seems almost as if he were still alive. I mean, he's been dead, over 65 years now, and yet somehow he's alive and with us. Some people have a personality that's that big that they overcome things like, small things like death. I'm not going to play one of the usual songs that one gets from him, with his mugging and his being funny and his sort of sandpaper voice. I want to remember the fact that he was above all a great jazz pianist. There's a funny story that goes along with this. Apparently the record companies had just had enough of him messing about, getting drunk, not turning up, and all the various things that he did when he was in his early 20s, and they said, look, don't drink, get organized, prepare, rehearse. And he kept saying yes, certainly. And a week went by and he hadn't done a thing, and then suddenly the morning of the recording date arrived and he realized that he hadn't done anything, hadn't even got a band together. So he hired a taxi, rushed around Harlem, picked up any musicians that he could get hold of, told them what he was going to play in the taxi going to the studio, recorded two absolute classics, and nodded very seriously when they said, well, there you see, Mr. Waller, that's what happens when you keep sober and you practice and you rehearse, and that's how well you can play. And he nodded absolutely yes, certainly understood, and somehow managed to keep a straight face. With this, the very, very efficient record company apparently, according to the story, reversed the titles for the song, so that ever since, the song you're about to hear has always been known as the Minor Drag. If anything isn't a drag, this is it. It's one of the great recordings from 1929, probably around the time of the great crash, which we are now experiencing yet again. Maybe we need this sort of music to cheer us up. This is Fats Waller's small group, no bass. The whole group is pushed along by his wonderful left hand on the piano. This is Fats Waller and the Minor Drag. Thank you. And how about that for a bit of jazz, ladies and gentlemen? Fats Waller, wonderful. Now, he may have been the cause of his own death by drinking too much and, well, doing everything too much, being completely overweight. The poor lady who we're about to hear didn't last much longer than Fats Waller. She was 41 when she died, and she died in childbirth. Not her first child, even, and she was married to a doctor. But there you are, these things happen. But like Fats Waller, there's something about her voice which sounds as if it were recorded yesterday, though in fact the recording you're about to hear was made in 1930. Her name was Conchita Supervia. She was absolutely gorgeous and sexy. She had the most amazing voice. She was a mezzo-soprano, which could deal with all the Rossini florid writing, all the coloratura passages, because it was written originally for mezzos, not for sopranos, people often forget. And she was such a one. She was wonderful. However, she was absolutely supreme as Carmen. She looked like you imagine Carmen to look. She was very Spanish, curly hair, sexy looking, wonderful. You could believe all the men falling for her. And she sounds like Carmen. Her phrasing's wonderful. The voice is absolutely unique. There's nobody that sounds like Conchita Supervia. And this record, now almost 80 years old, could have been recorded yesterday, except that they can't sing like this anymore. She was born in 1895. She made her debut at 15. And she became a star of opera and zarzuela, which is the sort of Spanish operetta form, equally. And she could sing English songs, French songs, Spanish songs. She could do the lot, and captivated all her audiences, whether it be in opera or on the concert stage. And she was, as you can imagine, bitterly mourned when she died suddenly and without any warning in 1936. Nevertheless, her records live on, and just as with Fats Waller, she is immortal. Conchita Supervia singing the famous first aria that Carmen sings as she comes on stage and captivates everybody by saying, "L'amour est un oiseau rebelle," a dangerous bird, and you've got to be careful with it, and she knows about love. She basically says, "I am Carmen, this is my creed, this is who I am." And there's nobody who does this better. In fact, there's nobody even approaches Conchita Supervia.
L'amour est un oiseau rebelle que nul ne peut apprivoiser. Et c'est bien en vain qu'on l'appelle si lui convient de refuser. L'un parle bien, l'autre se tait. Et c'est l'autre que je préfère. Il n'a rien dit, mais il me plaît. Il n'a jamais, jamais connu de loi. Si tu ne m'aimes pas, je t'aime. Si je t'aime, prends garde à toi. Si tu ne m'aimes pas, si tu ne m'aimes pas, je t'aime. Mais si je t'aime, si je t'aime, prends garde. plus, il est là, tout autour de toi. Vite, vite, il vient, s'en va, puis il revient. Tu crois le tenir, il t'évite, tu crois l'éviter, il te tient.
One of the all-time great opera singers, Conchita Supervia, with the most amazing voice. When people haven't heard her at all, I try and describe the voice by saying, imagine if you crossed an operatic mezzo-soprano with Edith Piaf, what would you get? And that's about as near as I can get to trying to describe her to anybody. Well, yet another artist who died prematurely was Al Boley. His beginning was rather strange. Listen to this. He was a British jazz singer because he lived in England and got his fame here. Yet he was actually born in Mozambique to Greek and Lebanese parents who met on the way to Australia but ended up moving to South Africa instead, and he was brought up in Johannesburg and then moved to London, where he gradually made his name singing and playing guitar with just about the cream of all the dance bands that were the big thing in England in the 30s. He thus made records and records and records and records. You can find so many records, you don't know what to do with it. He went to America with the Ray Noble Orchestra, sang some of Ray's finest songs, and then came back to London during World War II, and there's a bit of disagreement about what killed him. The official line is that he was killed by a parachute mine outside his apartment in Jermyn Street. But I actually met his widow, and she said something quite different, that he was found in his flat, completely untouched and uninjured. He was killed by the blast of a bomb, and the reason he got killed was that he was drunk and still in bed, and hadn't paid any attention to the air raid warning. Well, I don't know which of those is true. What is certainly true is he was a highly good-looking man, all the women adored him, he was quite small, but as I say, perfectly formed. You can see him performing. There are one or two bits of film of him, and he is on YouTube. Everything is on YouTube somewhere. So if you want to see and hear him, as it were, live, then all you've got to do is go to YouTube. However, amongst the many, many records that he made a couple on durium. Now, durium was the British equivalent of what in America is known as Hit of the Week. In other words, these were really cheap records put out weekly on a piece of cardboard with a sort of plastic covering, and you got two songs on each record, and the record actually went for much longer than most 78s of that time did, and because they were made of cardboard, they were sold really cheaply, and people, even during the great sort of slump of the 30s, could therefore afford to buy them. Sometimes the sound after all this time can be a bit dodgy because the records tend to curl up over the years, so the sound on this won't be the best. Nevertheless, it's a great recording. I couldn't decide which of the four tracks I've got on these records that I was going to play you, and in the end I've plumped for his recording on the 1st of April 1932 of Goodnight Vienna, with a great dance band of the time, but I don't really know which one it is. And it's sort of like a tango. It's not overtly a tango, but that's really what it is. It's Al Boley at the age of 42, because he was actually older than people realised he was. He was born in 1890 and he died in 1941. This is, as I say, 1932. He was just about at his peak then. So let's enjoy once again the voice of Albert Alec Al Boley.
Good night, Vienna, you city of a million melodies. Our hearts are thrilling to the strains that you play from dawn till the daylight dies. Good night, Vienna, where moonlight fills the air with mystery, and eyes are shining to the gypsy guitar that sing to the starry skies. Enchanted city of Columbine and Hero, we know the magic of your spell. Of our romances, you're the hero. Now is the time to say farewell. Good night, Vienna. Now lovers kiss beneath your linden trees. The world is waiting on the edge of the day, just waiting to say good night.
Al Boley, one of those voices with that special timbre that makes you a star, and of course great phrasing. And in a sense he was to Great Britain what Bing Crosby was to the United States, and of course even in the USA he was able to enjoy quite a lot of success. He was that good. Now at this point I've got to make an apology. When I played J'attendrai before by Tina Rossi, it was in fact a request from somebody in New Zealand, not the usual chap with the Portuguese name that I've been happy to play requests for before, but somebody else. The problem is that I've lost the email and therefore I can't give them a name check. So if they'd like to email me again and maybe ask me for something next time, I promise you I'll be more careful and be able to mention who it is. On the other hand, the last record, the Al Boley, was requested by a couple of Americans who come from Spokane, which is where Bing Crosby was born, incidentally. And they not only requested that, but they were literally round here today. So I do have their name. They are called Ron and Marsha Feller, F-E-L-L-E-R. Not Rockefeller, just Feller on its own. And they said they'd like to hear an Al Boley record, and I thought I'd play a somewhat more unusual one because it came from off one of those Durium records. So that's that. Okay, apologies made and name check made. I'm now going to play something, as they say, completely different. Yet another person who died very young was Dan Leno. He was the star of both the British music hall stage, where he was one of the top comedians, but also he was a very famous dame in what we call pantomime, which is a very, very specialised art form which we do at Christmas every year, not to be confused with the normal meaning of the word which you might describe, say, Charlie Chaplin as doing In other words, the full word from which we get the shortened word mime. Pantomime is a very special show that we have over here. Basically, they tell famous stories like Cinderella or Puss in Boots, and there are standard things you have to do. One of the things is that the older women are always played by men, and the leading romantic man is played by a girl. It's all very complicated. Something to do with a deep English psyche, no doubt. Anyhow, Dan Leno, who was born George Wilde Galvin, great name, he should have kept it, I think, was born in 1860 and died in 1904. At the height of his powers, towards the end of his life, he was just young enough to be able to make some records. I'm going to give you now his 1901 recording, which tells you about the complications of his family. The name of the track is My Wife's Relations, and as I said, it was recorded in London in 1901. Is it still funny? Well, that's for you to decide. Dan Leno, one of the great stars of the English Music Hall over 100 years ago.
There's a rather peculiar item occurred, if I can explain it to you, if I'm not keeping you waiting. There's a bit of money coming to our family, and we can't tell who is really entitled to it. And of course, none of us like to take it, you know, not knowing who it belongs to. Well, as a matter of fact, they won't let us. But it's through my stepfather. You see, when my dad died, dear old dad, I can see him now. He used to come home from work once a year. He was a hot cross bun maker. He used to sit me on his knee and pat me on the shoulder. Well, not always on the shoulder, but, well, of course, I was his son. He could pat me where he liked, of course. But it's through our stepfather that we can't find this, who this money belongs to. You see, my stepfather married twice. Well, when he married our second mother, my brother and I, we were away at the time. My brother is dead now. He died with hydrophobia. He had false teeth, and he took him out and put him in his coattail pocket, sat on him and bit himself. But however, that's running away from the subject. Well, when my brother returned from his work, where he'd been working for the, not masonry exactly, but it was the government had some stone they wanted breaking, and the brother got the contract. Well, when he came back, I came back at the same time. I'd only been away for 5 years. And during that time, our stepfather had married a third mother, and he deceased also our second mother. So my brother met our third mother and fell in love with her and married her. Well, now that's where the trouble commenced. Because, you see, that made me my brother's son. And my sister-in-law was really my mother. Well, now then, follow me closely with this. There was an aunt by marriage. She had an adopted daughter, left to her for rent or something. And this daughter, fell in love with a man that built the house for our second mother. You see where we're getting to? Well, now then, keep close to me with this. This is rather intricate. You see, the uncle, or the supposed... Oh, no, I'm wrong. Yes, that's right. Oh, and there was a postman in it as well. But however, I know we got so mixed up that my brother was his own father at the finish, I know. That's how it wound up. But of course, I didn't want to occupy your time with that, and I hope you won't think anything of what I said about Dad, dear old Dad. I'll tell you more about Dad later on, only I'm busy now. I'm going to have something to eat. And I've just got 10 minutes to go to a teetotal lecture. And if I don't hurry, I shan't be able to get a drop of something before I go.
Dan Leno, way back in 1901. Now, as some of you will know, I perform comedy myself, and I wonder how funny my stuff will seem 100 years from now. Of course, these people had to perform to live audiences. There were no sound films. There was very little recording, as you can hear. Now we've got it on YouTube, we've got it coming out of our ears on film, record, DVDs and everything else. And a lot of people, I'm afraid to say, wouldn't be able to produce live what they can in the studio with a lot of doctoring. So, since it's now time for me to present something of mine, I am going to give you one of my own songs this time performed live at the Edinburgh Festival some few years ago now. This is one of my own songs called Sister Jane, and this was live in front of a full audience at one of the bigger venues at Edinburgh back in the 80s, I think, when I was a little younger than I am now, but I like to think I pretty much sound the same. So, it's time for me to say thanks for listening once more. If you want to email me with requests, the address is spats47@ntlworld.com, spats47@ntlworld.com, or if you've got any suggestions as to how I can actually get rid of this rumbling from the recording on my laptop, I'd be delighted to hear, because nobody's come up with a solution yet, I'm afraid, so you have to just tolerate it for the minute. And as I say, with that, I leave you once again, and till the next time, this is Earl Oakin, and this is Sister Jane.
Wendy looks into a mirror, hates what she sees there, wishes she had hair like Sister Jane. Every evening she sits waiting, no one ever calls. Everybody falls for Sister Jane. Jane takes taxis when there is no Jaguar. Wastes her time with many men their time on her. Wendy's looking in a mirror, hoping for just one. She'd have so much fun if he'd prefer to ask.